You're listening to 90.5 FM, WSNC Winston-Salem, your genuine jazz station from the campus of Winston-Salem State University. I'm Jim Steele, 729. It's cold out there, but you knew that, didn't you? Clear skies, about 9 degrees on the campus of Winston-Salem State University. I'm here because we lost Baron Bruce, who was a wonderful student intern and just did a magnificent job of promoting the station and doing the Friday morning show and any morning show that he was on. But he graduated with honors, and we're delighted for him but sad for us. So that's why I'm here to talk with folks who come in for this wonderful interview session that we have on Friday mornings. I don't know what we're calling it now, but I'm Jim Steele. Glad to be with you this morning. And with me in the studio is an old friend from different jobs ago, and we kept up with one another. And now she is, of course, wearing more than one hat as she normally does. She's here on the campus now at Winston-Salem State University as the executive director of the Center of Excellence for the Elimination of Health Disparities, Melissa Witt Glover. Dr. Glover, so happy to have you in the studio today.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Good morning. Well, you know, we've talked about a lot of different things over the years, and you, of course, started your own research company several years ago, Gramercy Research. Tell us about that to start out with.
So we started in 2009 and really wanted to focus on being in the community and being part of the community to address differences in health. We do a lot of public health work. We really work to try to help people figure out how to use the resources around them to exercise, eat healthier, eliminate stress. Those are some of the three major barriers to having optimal health.
And the research group that that you founded, when you pulled everything together, what was your hope that you would that you would bring to the community when you started your company?
So I've been doing research for a lot of years, and one of the things we know is when someone gets in a study, they do well while they're in that study, and then when the program's over, they go back to what they were doing before. And so our hope with Gramercy was that we would be able to work with people in the communities to say, what solutions do we need to come up with that you can stick with for even after this program is over? So if our funding is over and we run out of money, what can we do that you can continue on your own? So really long-term solutions to problems that we're going to continue to face with chronic disease. So
when you and I met, we were both on the campus at Wake Forest University Baptist Medical Center. You were on faculty and doing all the things that you did. Mm-hmm. And then you decided, hey, I'm going to start my own research company. That was a very gutsy move. Mm-hmm. And how many African American women in the country are doing what you do as far as research, specifically research into health disparities?
There are a lot of people in academic institutions. So there are people all over that are doing this research. A lot in academic institutions. I don't know of very many who are doing it as an independent research firm. That's independent research firms in general that do public health, I think, are fairly rare. So I would say not many.
But you also have an interesting story as to how you got into it, because mm-hmm. I said it took a lot of nerve, and it did. Mm-hmm. But was that your original plan?
It was not. So I had been struggling for some time to try to figure out, what is my purpose? What is my meaning? I want to make a difference with the research that I'm doing. And I met someone who had an independent firm who was interested in getting more into research. And so she was grooming me to take over her firm, to move in with her. And so I actually was planning on transitioning into her firm, which I did. And about a week into it, she suddenly had a change of heart, no explanation. And so I was not quite sure what was going on, had I made a mistake, a misstep, and I had been fasting and praying for a year trying to figure out, is this the right step? And felt that I was following what I was supposed to be doing. And so when I stepped out, I thought, oh my goodness, she changed her mind. What's going on? But within a week of me transitioning is when I started Gramercy, because I said, okay, I stepped out, and I don't think I would have done that had I not met this woman. Mm. But as I look back, I realize that was not probably what my final step was. But had I not met her, I would not have stepped out because I didn't know any other models that you could use to do research.
Yeah. And you've been creating your own model as you've gone along because you have great support. Mm-hmm. Your spouse is in business with you. Mm-hmm. Now, is your mom still doing the books?
She is.
So you can't go wrong when your mom is doing the books.
Yes, I tell everybody orange is not my new black, and so I need to make sure that I trust the person who's handling the books. And so she had been doing finances for a long time and agreed to come in. It's really you have to be very careful when you're handling federal dollars.
Yeah.
So, yes. But, yeah, I have a lot of support. We have a really great team. And we've had some transitions over the years, but we have an amazing team of people who are passionate about doing whatever needs to be done to make sure that the people who participate in our programs get what they need so they're not just research subjects. They're not just guinea pigs. Yeah. They are part of our family. We have people who come back years after they've participated in a research study and ask for help, and we help them as best as we can. So,
one of the things, of course, that's very important about the fact that you are an African-American woman doing research in health disparities is there's been a big gap for a long time as in research because the people who were in these research projects, which decide what kind of medications are good, what procedures are good, they didn't look like us.
Right.
And there are some subtle differences and not so subtle differences. Mm-hmm. So talk about that. Walk us into why it's important to have people of color in the research industry talking about health disparities and just general good health for people of color?
Because, you know, when you think about any person that's going to be representing an organization, you want that person, that medication, that thing to take into account nuances about the community, nuances about the individuals that are participating. And so I'll use it as an example. The types of research studies that we do, for example, with healthy eating and physical activity, we did a project several years ago that was looking at dietary approaches to stop hypertension, which is a specific diet that has been shown to, if you eat that diet and you exercise, it will reduce your blood pressure the same amount as taking a blood pressure medication, which is great. The materials were developed in an intervention study by people who were very smart, made some really wonderful recipes. When you try to transition that kind of program out into certain communities, the foods did not appeal to those communities. Nobody had asked people in those communities, what's available in your neighborhood?
Yeah.
Here's this book of recipes. Can you use those? And so what was happening is you've got this amazing program, but the people who need it most aren't using it because it doesn't appeal to them. And so just as an example of how we were able to work with the community, we took the recipes to people in the community. We said, would you eat this? And they said no. And so we said, what kinds of things, what kinds of things would you eat? We took those kinds of things that the community would eat. We modified them to make them healthy so it's still in line with what's needed. And it worked. We also went to the grocery stores in the neighborhoods they were interested in working in. And we said, based on the diet that is recommended here and looking at the grocery stores in these neighborhoods, you're setting the people wouldn't be able to be successful. Foods are higher. It's not as available. And so we worked with people in the community. Again, what can you afford? Let's put something together that's reasonable. And so when you don't have the voices of the community at the table, you're creating amazing solutions that only work for you. And if you're not a part of that community, it doesn't work once you get it out the door. It doesn't work. And we see that every day with lots of policies and lots of programs.
But doesn't it seem like that would be common sense? Because you are a researcher. You're in the business for asking questions and getting results. Wouldn't that just be just common knowledge that you should ask people?
It would be common knowledge that you should ask people. And I think, you know, it's kind of difficult because when you're a researcher and you're dependent on research dollars, you are also trying to balance what funders want to fund versus what community members want to see. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's difficult. So, for example, I struggle a lot when we're doing, say, physical activity and nutrition interventions, and you're talking to the people who are at highest risk, and they're main concern is things like jobs and education for the students, education for their children. So how do you as a public health researcher propose a physical activity or nutrition intervention when the people that you want to reach need jobs? And so that's, you know, those kinds of things are often a struggle. So you can ask people, but if they give you an answer that you can't take back to your funder, what do you do?
Exactly. Yeah. You're listening to 90.5 FM WSNC Winston-Salem, your genuine jazz station from the campus of Winston-Salem State University. I'm Jim Steele. This is Early Morning Jazz, and we're talking with Melissa Witt Glover, who is the director of the Center of Excellence for the Elimination of Health Disparities, and also head of her own company, Gramercy Research, and is doing some useful and actually fascinating research in our community about ways to keep us healthy and strong and live longer. So, Melissa Witt Glover, in this community, are you facing some interesting obstacles? Are there more opportunities here for the type of research that you're doing to address the needs of this community? Because we think of ourselves as being, I guess, a unique community in many ways. But tell us about what you're facing in your research in addressing health disparities in the Winston-Salem and Forsyth County area.
So I think you see things like, again, there are a lot of really good evidence-based programs. I don't know, are we allowed to say evidence-based anymore based on our president? But there are lots of programs that are out there. But again, when you think about the day-to-day realities of people's lives, you see that there are, you know, many obstacles to people engaging in good health. And again, I bring up the Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension project. When we did that project, we wanted to try to look at communities that were hardest hit with high blood pressure. And so we did a comparison of grocery stores in lower income neighborhoods in Winston-Salem and the same grocery stores in higher income neighborhoods in Winston-Salem. And what we found, statistically significant difference, that in the lower income neighborhoods, there was less availability of fresh foods, and those foods cost more in lower income neighborhoods than they did in higher income neighborhoods. And so when you think about that, we are a healthy community overall, if you think about us overall, but there are several pockets of this community whose health and whose resources and whose opportunities are much lower than other segments of the community. And we are not often spreading our resources fairly around the community so that we can all prosper. And so that makes it harder, because the groups that have the worst health disparities are in those groups, you know, those parts of the community with concentrated poverty, with lower education, with food swamps, not food deserts, but food swamps, where it's not that you don't have food available, but it's just not healthier foods.
Yeah.
And, you know, so
I haven't heard that term, food swamps.
Yes.
We've talked about food deserts and the lack of fresh foods and lack of places to buy food, period, in certain communities. Excuse me. And I see that every morning when I'm driving to work, because when I come down 52, if I get off 52 and I go on one of the side streets, you see areas where there are no fresh foods, no stores to buy food, or they were there historically, but they're closed up now. Mm-hmm. And you pass a beautiful space that would be wonderful for a farmer's market. But it's so far that's one of those things that just hasn't worked. So what's a smart way? Maybe I'm asking about another study that needs to be done. But what's a smart way of draining? I don't want to use that term. But what's a smart way of fixing the issue of lack of healthy foods in certain communities? Because we've had this locally sourced campaign going on in our communities where we're getting fresh food and we're having the farmers markets and so on and so on. And they're very popular, but they're not everywhere. And some of the people who really, really need it don't have access to these places.
Right. So One of the projects that we're doing right now is a translating the diabetes prevention program, which is very successful. And it one part of it is recommending that you eat a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables. And one of the things that we are doing in this study is we are going to help people figure out how to create their own garden so they have their own fresh fruits and vegetables. At the Enterprise Center up the street at the SG Atkins Enterprise Center, there is an amazing garden in the back. And for, I believe it's $25 a year, you can get a garden plot that you can that would be enough food for a family of four for a year, and so and they'll help you learn how to do that. And so, you know, those kinds of things could be helpful not only for improving access but also controlling what you're, you know, what pesticides you are or are not using on your foods. And it's obviously a lot cheaper. There are some, you know, organizations within the community. I can think of Neighbors for Better Neighborhoods and, you know, people in the community who are also helping to organize around advocating for resources in all parts of this community that I think we could join in the efforts that they're doing. I know Paula McCoy has opened up a grocery store on the north side of the community, and it is amazing. I don't know if you've been to it yet, but it's an amazing example of, I think, what someone in the community can do to try to bring resources. Mm-hmm. So it's up past the airport. And it is a grocery store, but they sell everything from fresh fruits and vegetables. They sell frozen. They sell refrigerated foods. They have a little space for people who are vendors. They can come and set up a booth. They have a chess table. It's like a part grocery store, part community center. I love it a lot. I wish there were more of those kinds of things around the community. And so, you know, I don't know how she was able to do it, but that was a part of the community that there's not a grocery store anywhere close, you know, in that area, except for, and her prices are the same, if not cheaper than, you know, your larger chains. So it's not.
Well, send us the information, or at least send me the information so I can share it on Facebook and on our website, because that's one of the conversations that we're trying to continuously have, and that's these opportunities that are popping up. And you mentioned the garden up the street at the Enterprise Center, and that's something that we've been talking about but want to talk more and more about. And you mentioned $25 for a plot for a year, and that produces, for that $25, you can produce a lot of food.
Absolutely. And, for an entire year.
And your family, your children, maybe even you, will finally understand where food comes from.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know about you, but when I grew up, my father had gardens everywhere. And my mother would spend hours, you know, canning and freezing. And, I mean, they just worked all the time. And they had, of course, a real... a real business and real jobs and all that. But that was one of the things that people did. People grew their own food. How is that going? How is that transition in our community to from just urban areas to urban gardening areas? How is that transition going in our community? Because you hear these different stories, but I just wonder, how successful is it?
I think it is slow going. You know, we I think we as a society became victim to all the improvements that happened. And so some of the reasons, for example, why we're not as physically active as we are, as we used to be, is because we have all these amazing modern conveniences now that mean we don't actually have to move. Some of the reasons why we don't do, you know, growing our own foods and slow cooking anymore is because we got these amazing inventions like microwaves and things that could speed everything up. And so we've lost a lot of those skill sets. And as we get busier, you know, it does take a lot. It takes more time, obviously, to do those things. And as we've gotten busier, people have gotten out of the knowledge of those kinds of things. And so I think it's slow going, but I think we're starting to see in some segments of the community, people getting more into slow growing, and I hope it reaches those of us who are most in need.
We're talking with Dr. Melissa Witt Glover, who is the director of the Center of Excellence for the Elimination of Health Disparities at Winston-Salem State University. She's also head of her own company, Gramercy Research. And there is a program that we want to share with you all about a study that you're doing called Learning and Developing Individual Exercise Skills for Better Life Study. The acronym is the LADIES Study. And tell us about that and what you're doing to increase physical activity for African-American women.
So that's a study we wrapped up a couple of years ago. It was the largest study that's ever been done looking at trying to increase physical activity in African-American women. We tend to be the group that is least physically active, and physical activity is one of those free things that you can do to improve a lot of your health outcomes. And so we got some funding to figure out what can we do, again, culturally, what matters to the community, what can we do to get people to engage in physical activity. We know that in the African-American community, lots of us go to church, particularly women. The church is an organization that is focused on health, not only spiritually, but moving towards more physical health. And so we developed an intervention to compare what if we taught about physical activity from a biblical perspective versus what if we just use secular literature versus what if we left people on their own. And what we found is that when we presented a program from a biblical perspective and we explained the mandate from God to take care of your health, and we walked people through scriptures, they were able to increase their physical activity more than any of the other groups. And that program involved a little over 400 women from this community from 31 churches. And you would think, I mean, with all the studies that are going on, that wouldn't be the largest study, but unbelievably, that's the largest study that anyone has ever done focused on African-American women and improving physical
Congratulations.
Activity. And it's the only one that has worked, which, again, going back to your question about why it's important for us to be involved, it's the only study that's worked, that as well as it has, and people kept their physical activity up for a year after the program was over. That's what we want to see.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank
you. That says a whole lot about your work and the fact that you are what you're doing with research and science and spirituality. You're not separating them.
You're
it's a perfect match. And somebody I heard this from a really smart guy years ago. I think his name was Einstein, about not separating religion and science.
And that's important because, again, when you talk about involving people from the community and the research, we're not separate. We don't separate our religion from our day-to-day life. We don't separate our spirituality from our day-to-day life, but we try to compartmentalize things when it comes to research, and that's when we come up with programs that don't work once you try to get real people to use them. So you've got to incorporate those. And so it was the idea for that program came actually right when I moved to Winston-Salem. I came to a conference at Winston-Salem State University that was put on by the Center of Excellence for the Elimination of Health Disparities when Sylvia Flack was running it. And Dr. Moses Goldman was presenting. I was at Wake Forest, and I came to Winston-Salem State. Dr. Moses Goldman was presenting, and the idea came, and we wrote the grant proposal together. But that was born right here.
Wow. And here you are.
And here I am, full circle.
Back heading up the program.
Exactly. It's amazing how God works.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's amazing what happens when you just keep showing up.
Yes. Yeah.
We're talking with Melissa Witt Glover, a researcher and fascinating woman. I've talked about you before about being the coolest mom in town, that because I see photographs on Facebook of you and your children on horseback doing all sorts of exciting things. And so I kid you about that. So you're covering a lot of different bases, but it looks like priority number one is always your family.
Yes, it has to be. Although I don't know, as much as I work, I don't know if they would agree. But I try to make sure that no matter what's going on, if they need me, I stop what I'm doing and make sure I take care of them. And I make a concerted effort to make sure that I spend time. I have two boys. I make sure that I spend plenty of time with them, plenty of affirmation, make sure we know what's going on. And so you were talking about the picture on social media on horseback. We try to go every year. We try to do something that we haven't done before. because I think it helps to make them more well-rounded. Sure. So.
And it makes you a cool mom.
I tried to try my best.
You're listening to 90.5 FM, WSNC Winston-Salem, your genuine jazz station from the campus of Winston-Salem State University. I'm Jim Steele, talking with Melissa Witt Glover, who is head of Gramercy Research, a company that she started with her family in this community. And she's also the executive director of the Center of Excellence for the Elimination of Health Disparities here on the campus of Winston-Salem State University. We were talking about Dr. Sylvia Flack, and she is a fascinating woman. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about one of her other loves, which is jewelry collection.
Yes.
So we were talking about that, and we just had a big time last year in talking with her. But what a wonderful job she's done.
Yes.
With creating this center.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're taking up.
Yes.
Where she left off.
Yes, she left some big shoes to fill, and she did an amazing job. And so I am grateful to be able to stand on her shoulders and continue that work.
So what do you see? What's on the horizon for the center now that you are the executive director and you've got your own ideas to bring and a history with this campus and with this community dealing with issues of health disparities?
So what we are really focusing on, again, is getting out into the community and seeing what the needs are. And last spring, we actually started that process. We had five student interns, and we did we surveyed organizations in the community, and we said, what are some issues that are going on? What can we help to address? And our students did some amazing work. There was a community up behind the football stadium here, mm-hmm. called Columbia, mm-hmm. Heights, and a church there was interested in doing some canvassing of the community to talk to neighbors about what kinds of improvements they wanted to do, but they didn't have the capacity. So our students, we trained our students, they went door to door and collected a community survey, summarized the results and presented it. They did an environmental assessment. And so based on that work, one of the things that they found in Columbia Heights was that there was a lack of opportunities for fresh fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. There was a corner store, but it didn't have fresh fruits and vegetables. Our student presented to the health department. The health department actually had some funding for corner store conversions. Mm. They funded the store. And who knew? They funded the store in Columbia Heights. And so now that store, that grocery store, has opportunities for they provide fresh fruits and vegetables right in the neighborhood. So that's just one of the examples. One of the other things I'm so excited about is we have a mobile health clinic.
Yeah.
We are the only HBCU in the nation that has a mobile health clinic. And I don't know how many people know that.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Because you see this huge bus.
Yeah.
And it's a great huge billboard.
Right.
It's exciting. And you're like, what's going on? What is that?
We are the only. So we are expanding our mobile. So in the past, we've done screenings, which has been amazing. So you can come on, you can get free screenings to find out if you have high blood pressure or diabetes. We have just finished signing the contract. We're partnering with United Health Centers. We are now going to be offering actual care. So you can now not just come on for screening, but United Health Centers and Southside Discount Pharmacy, through a grant from KBR here in town, we are going to provide care. So you can now come on the mobile unit and get the mobile unit will be in the neighborhood.
Wow.
That eliminates the transportation problem. And you can get immunizations. We're going to do flu shots. We're going to do strep vaccines. You can get basic wound care. You can get diabetes management. And so we're doing that in a partnership with us, Winston-Salem State University, United Health Centers, Southside Discount Pharmacy, and our students, our nursing students, physical therapy students, occupational therapy students, are going to be able to provide care, which means we're serving the needs of the community, and we are also graduating students who understand firsthand how to address health disparities, which means they are going to be better practitioners when they get out. So I'm so excited. We're getting ready to start that, and we'll be at Eastside Shopping Center. We'll be, I think we're trying to do one day a week by the library, but we're going to those communities where there's not a healthcare facility.
Well, keep us up to date. We're out of time.
Okay.
But thank you so much for coming by. This conversation will continue. We're talking with Melissa Witt Glover, who is the executive director of the Center of Health of Excellence for the Elimination of Health Disparities. Thank you very much for your hard work. And once again, this conversation will continue.
Thanks, Jim.
You're listening to 90.5 FM, WSNC Winston-Salem, your genuine jazz station from the campus of Winston-Salem State University.
Is Africa a place? Is it the people? Is it politics, culture, and art? What does Africa mean to you? Africa Will Now Project is a program that will seek to answer these and other complex questions by engaging in non-traditional discussions with scholars, artists, journalists, activists, and others who examine various issues that exist in the entire African world. I am your host and producer, James Pope. Africa World Now Project Collective consists of international media journalist, producer, and activist Moise Mutale, and Africa World Now Project media correspondent Una Ngunda. I look forward to spending each week bringing you content from and about the African world that you will not hear anywhere else.
Wednesday at 8 on 90.5 WSNC. 90.5 FM WSNC, Winston-Salem.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now! The biggest secret, my life as a New York Times reporter in the shadow of the war on terror. Today, we spend the hour with former New York Times reporter James Risen, who left the paper in August to join The Intercept, where this week he published a 15,000-word story. In it, Risen describes his struggles to publish major national security stories in the post-9/11 period and how both the government and his own paper, The New York Times, suppressed his reporting, including on the Bush administration's warrantless wiretapping program, for which he would later win the Pulitzer Prize.
After I told him